for the most part, you got to keep that out of your head, or you'll just start. If you let that start getting in your head, you're going to just find reasons to be mad about something or another.
Right.
I always tell myself that a well-maintained good farm can make bad birds grow good, and good birds grow great.
Well, I like that. There's going to be bad days in every type of farm, whether it's livestock or not, contract or owning, and you got to stay positive.
Ladies and gentlemen, farmers, ranchers, and distinguished guests, thank you for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast, where we discuss the latest ideas, methods, trends, and techniques available to help your farm achieve higher levels of farm profitability. The Farm for Profit podcast is co-hosted by Tanner Winterhoff, the Iowa Bankerman, and David Whitaker, the Iowa Land Guy, where in tandem, they will share their ideas and advice from industry experts. Thank you again for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast. Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long. And now, here's Tanner and David.
Hey, listeners, welcome back to the Farm for Profit podcast. This is Tanner Winterhoff.
And this is David Whitaker.
Thank you so very much for joining us. Again, this is a profit episode. So if this is the first time you are joining us, this is going to have a What's Working in Ag segment and a general topic to help your farm achieve higher levels of profitability. The next show in the queue, or the next one coming out next week, is a Farm for Fun episode where we kick back and maybe have a little bit more of a laid-back structure, Dave.
And thank you all for suggesting topics for either our profit side or the Farm for Fun side to talk about. It's you guys commenting and bringing suggestions to the table that makes this fun always. If you have a suggestion, make sure you go to Farm4, that's the number 4, profitllc@gmail.com, and check us out on all our social media handles.
Yeah, we really appreciate that. It helps us out to know exactly what you want to hear. And it's a lot of fun being able to solve any type of problem or question that you've got. So keep sending those in. We really appreciate it.
And Tanner, we love reviews as well.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know. And so we have a today listener review brought to you by one of our good sponsors, BW Fusion.
Yes, proud partner. Don't forget about their fall incentive right now. Signing up to purchase 500 acres of Meltdown and the 401 microbial team. So that's in any form that they've got. Then you get a free field in their 365 program. We've talked about that over and over, Dave. It's an important program, and they want you to get a glimpse of what you can learn about your field. So you get that 365 program free on one field when you sign up 500 acres. This is only good for the fourth quarter. Don't forget that they combine their best-in-class products along with that soil and tissue program to provide you the tools necessary to address the limiting factors in your field in real time. What's our review, Dave?
Well, I tell you, Central Iowa, is it Rainage?
It looks like it.
Central Iowa _ Rainage. I like this conversation. Thumbs up. Well, we appreciate your thumbs up and hope other people like it as well.
Absolutely. Another 5-star review. Thank you so much for leaving those behind. Don't forget to do that yourself. You might get read on one of our next episodes.
There you go. And if you're ever thinking of partnering with Farm for Profit podcast, give us a call as well. Same email. We love our partners that we work with. And Tanner, now on to our What's Working in Ag section. Who do we have today?
We have Peggy Meyer on the Zoom meeting with us. Welcome, Peggy.
Welcome. Thank you for having me on your show today.
Why don't you let our listeners know a little bit about yourself and what your tie to agriculture is?
Okay, great. Yes, I am Peggy Meyer. I'm from Superior, Nebraska. I am a mom of 6, and I'm a farmer's wife, and I'm also a mental health provider. And so I think all of these three roles are pretty awesome and keeps me pretty busy. My kids are pretty active. They range right now in age from 8 to 25. And I do a lot of the books for the farm. So I keep, you know, pay all the bills and keep track of all the invoices and also manage the house. And in my other spare time, I'm, you know, help other people with their mental health issues. Oh,
spare time, she said, Tanner. I heard 6 kids. I heard a wife. I heard all the books. I don't think there is any spare time.
Well, she even has time to make friends because listeners, just like you suggesting people to us, this was a listener suggestion. So this came from Hank Wade. So
Not only
does she do all of that, but she also has time to make social friends
and
put this together. But the main reason that we've got you on this podcast, Peggy, is because you're working on a new project, right?
Yes, I am.
What
you
is
know,
that?
With harvest last year and doing the books for the farm, I was just so frustrated and just driving myself crazy because I had taken on the task of trying to use QuickBooks to our advantage to make sure that we, you know, are financially more sound in our farming practice. And so I was getting used to entering in all of the expenses in by field, so we know which field is being pretty productive, right? Well, then I got to harvest and I was attempting to put in the income into QuickBooks per farm and per field. And I just was really frustrated. I was spending hours and hours at the kitchen table looking through scale tickets, looking through settlement sheets and trying to match them up and trying to figure out which field got paid from which settlement. And I was driving myself nuts. Mm-hmm. And at the kitchen table, can you imagine just all the stuff that I all can. Piled there and then having to eat supper? All right. All the papers go away, you know, I'll stack again and
that's
get it
not
all
true.
Back out again.
That's not how that goes. It's I ordered pizza, everybody eats in the living room.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's exactly
we're not picking all those papers
can
up.
Can I come over at your house and have supper?
That's the way that works. Casey's pizza is popular for a reason.
Yep.
No. Yes, yes. And we do have one of those. No. So a couple times during harvest usually.
So how did you start figuring out a solution to this problem?
Well, I just figured there had to be an easier way. There's got to be an easier way to match all of these documents together because the contracts, you know, have a contract number and that is on the settlement sheet. The settlement sheet also has scale ticket numbers, but there wasn't a really good way. So I started searching out some different softwares that I could potentially use. And I really couldn't find one that was either easy to use or just specifically, I was just focused on harvest. I just wanted to get that taken care of. And I couldn't find one. So I started looking and I had actually had an email come through on a guy that I had worked with on a different company saying, hey, I'm going to start this company called Sela Labs and I'm going to start 10,000 tech companies in 10 years and I need ideas for software.
10,000 tech companies in 10 years.
Yep. That's an audacious goal.
Wow.
Yeah, it is.
And so I'm like, okay, well, there's got to be a data software that could put all of these numbers together, right? And so I was so frustrated one morning. I just spent 3 hours, wrote a 4-page proposal, sent it in, and a week later I got a phone call with them. And that was probably back in November, December of last year. And it is now the end of August, and I have a software called Field Pocket ready to roll.
Holy smokes. That was fast.
And it, yeah. Field Pocket is the name?
Yes.
Gotcha. So what are the key features of Field Pocket?
So it's really easy to use. Basically, you just snap a picture or upload a document that's, you know, your contract or all your scale tickets and your settlement sheets as they come in. Field Pocket will transcribe that data for you. You don't have to enter it. But if you're one of those that want to enter the data for yourself, you can go ahead and do that. Once you have all of those documents, they'll link them together. So it'll automatically match the contract with the settlement sheet, the scale tickets with the settlement sheet, and you can easily get that in customizable reports. So as long as your fields are entered in there correctly, which you do approve before all of the reports can come out, you can just click a button and say, hey, I want to know what this field made. And it doesn't matter if you use your corn or your soybeans or whatever grain you took to the elevator went to two different elevators. It's the same thing. They'll compile all of that data together and you can send yourself a report. You can send somebody else a report. You can filter by commodity, by elevator, by field.
Can
by
you
date.
Sync with QuickBooks?
And it'll eventually get to QuickBooks. We're still working on that piece, but to get awesome. To harvest at this point. But you can download a report that will make it really a lot easier for you to be nice. Able to enter that data into it.
Export a CSV, Tanner. There you go.
Yeah. So this sounds like you have created something that could be extremely efficient in the hands of a farmer or whoever's in charge of record keeping for farms.
Yes. And that was the goal. One, the first goal was to save me a ton of time, but I also want to save a lot of other people time because if there's anybody else like me that's doing the books as a farmer's wife or just, you know, I know how busy the farmers are. They are the last thing that they want to do is paperwork, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So if I can make it a lot easier for somebody to do that, save them time, save them energy, frustration, stress, whatever, and save money because you can find lost loads. Like gotcha. If you didn't get paid for a steel ticket, that's a lot of money.
Right.
So is this an app that's going to be on a phone or is it a software based like a PC or a Mac?
Both.
Both.
So
okay.
It originates on the desktop and you can subscribe to that on the desktop and then it'll have the mobile app.
So
you can give team members, like if you have truck drivers.
That's where I was going with it. I was wondering if you had multiple truck drivers, like how do we get the scale tickets all entered into the one common database? You got her nailed. You have an app that syncs back to the desktop. Fantastic.
Yep. And so you can give permission to, you know, the truck drivers. You can sign them in as a team member and only give them permission for scale tickets. So they won't be able to see your contracts and they won't be able to see the information on your settlement sheets.
So Peggy, Tanner is not very tech savvy, but he is the grain driver. So if he's hauling the grain, is this going to work? Can he figure it out? Or how hard is this? How user friendly is it? I'm sure you tried to make it that way.
Oh yeah. To me, it's really user friendly. I mean, it's really the look of it is very simple. You know, if you know how to take a picture, if you're a truck driver, your grain cart, you can take a picture, you can do this, and upload it. It's right there in the app. It just says, you know, you just push in, say, hey, upload this picture, take us this picture. You can do either one and then it'll upload for you. And the person that is, you know, doing the main work, like myself would be doing, I can just see that it's uploaded and it's processing and I can approve it. And then I can do all of the report linking that I want.
So Tanner, this is one of the reasons that we have What's Working in Ag, because this has got my juices flowing. I love new technology and I love stuff that can help save us money and make it smarter, bolder, faster, quicker.
Yep.
This sounds like it can do everything of that. So fantastic. Glad to have you on. I want to know where to get it. I'm already trying to Google it. Can I find it anywhere around or where can we find your product?
Yep. Just go to fieldpocket.com and soon, I don't know when this podcast is going to be aired, but it's up. You can right now, there is a landing page. You can send us your email and your contact information. And once we just got notified that it's been approved in the App Store. So yay for us.
Yeah,
it's going to be ready to roll and purchase here in the next week or two.
Very cool. So if somebody wants to reach out directly to you, is it best to go through fieldpocket.com or do you have another piece of contact information you'd like to share?
Yeah, they can email me at peggy@fieldpocket.com.
Perfect.
Look me up on Facebook or Instagram.
This was awesome. This was fun. I didn't know what to expect, and this is exactly what the What's Working in Ag segment is for. This is brand new, can't even get it yet, and it could work for your farm.
Very beneficial.
Now it's time, though, to move into our main topic, and I'm kind of excited about this topic because I have a little personal experience, and Corey, you've got a little personal experience to throw in. We're not fully going to be the experts today, but a listener wrote in and asked us to do a show focused on custom livestock because a lot of times that is one of the first items that is considered when it comes to bringing a next generation back to the farm. It's looked at as an additional form of revenue outside of regular row crop in order to do that. So that's what we're going to focus on today. We've got a great guest on the Zoom meeting today, Travis. He is part of Circle U Farms, according to his handle on TikTok, cattle and poultry farmer who's here today to help us provide this episode with straightforward information around custom raising your livestock. Welcome, Travis.
Hi.
So what do you have going on your farm?
Well, I'm just a cattle and poultry farmer. Just kind of like you said, I started out here a while back and started taking over my family's commercial cow-calf operation and kind of doubled it in size and added in some feeder calves and stuff. And then I bought, just as a source for additional revenue and fertilizer, I bought one poultry farm. And then a few years later, I bought another one.
Where are you located?
We are in Southwest Missouri.
Okay. Nice.
All the way in the very corner. We're in Berry County.
So as we record this here towards the middle of September, what do you got going on down there? Have you started harvest yet?
Well, the guys, it looks like everybody's kind of chomping at the bit, but I haven't seen anybody start harvest yet. We're still finishing up silage and stuff is still kind of getting finished up. Hay season starting to wind down. No, I haven't seen anybody jumping in any corn yet.
Gotcha. Corey, anybody around us you see taking off?
Yeah, we've had some beans come off, some early group beans, and then a little bit of corn, not much. I checked some 109-day maturity corn last weekend. It was just starting to black layer. So silage, that kind of stuff, it's been starting.
Yeah. So listeners, as we prepare for harvest ourselves, we record these just a little bit ahead of time. So I'll give you a little timestamp. Like I said, we're right here in the middle of September. But back to the topic. So we're talking about contract growing livestock or custom raising livestock. So by definition, production contracts specify the services that are provided by the farmer or contractor in this case for what they're going to do and what they're going to produce. The contract's going to cover the services provided, the way the farmer is going to be compensated, and the specific contractor responsibilities put in by the integrator. So the integrator, Corey, is the people who own the livestock, right?
That's what I would consider, yeah.
So for example, the farmer is going to put the labor together, the housing together, the equipment, whether that is other contractors that you have to line up, and the integrator will provide you with the feed, the vet connection, and livestock transportation. Would you say that's right, Travis?
Yeah, that's correct.
Pretty much anything that goes in the pig besides water, maybe?
That would be probably right? Pretty accurate. Yeah.
It's kind of what I consider it. So okay. I'm helping with this episode as a host, but then also because I contract finish hogs.
Yep.
Tanner, your family contract, you're contract finishing hogs and correct. Have some experience owning hogs.
Correct.
And your in-laws contract finish cattle.
That's correct. And have a little experience owning cattle. And then we brought Travis on, obviously, with the cattle connection and the poultry side. So I'm really curious about the poultry side because I don't have any experience. So when I get into those questions, I'm going to be probably just as intrigued as our listeners when we get to those topics.
Yeah, about the furthest I know about poultry production is I want some of their manure on my ground.
Okay, so let's think about this. Travis, when we're getting ready to get started, what was necessary for you to get into that first contract poultry situation? You said you had to go buy a site, right?
Yeah, I had to buy. I bought an existing farm.
Okay, so when you bought that farm, what came on that farm?
Right, so I got that my first farm is just like 7 acres, I think. And it's a small, both of my poultry farms are fairly small, but they operate the same as all of the other farms. My first one was the smallest one. It's 240 foot wide by 400 foot long houses that hold the chickens and then a well house and a compost shed. And that's about it as far as, I mean, had all the equipment in it, everything. It was already a turnkey operation whenever I bought it.
Okay. So, Corey, when you guys bought your site, what came with the site that you bought?
So, ours was kind of unique in the sense of it came with a little bit of farm ground, came with an actual house, like a livable house for humans.
Right.
And then three hog barns that were, we call them 1,350 head barns. They're natural ventilated and tunnel ventilated, slatted with the manure underneath. Let's see, I'm trying to think of, they were 17, 18 years old at the time.
Okay.
So they were existing. That was my ticket back to the farm.
So we don't always have to build brand new. We can find existing sites in our neighborhood if the opportunity presents to get into contract feeding livestock.
Yep. They were 15 years old at the time, now that I do math in my head.
Wow, that's quick math. I'm impressed. Banker's impressed.
I guessed earlier.
So the first step is having a facility. We got to have a location. So Travis mentioned he got 7 acres or a small parcel that came around his barns. But you got to have buildings, and you got to have some necessary. He mentioned a compost shed and a well shed. You got to be able to get water and shelter to the livestock.
Yeah, and now that you said that, I'm going to say, you know, the benefit of buying an existing site, because usually when you're talking livestock, right, the DNR gets involved if you're a sort of what do they call it, CAFO?
Yeah, but CAFO.
CAFO, what is that, a centralized animal feeding operation?
There you go.
I think, and it's based on a certain amount of animal units. But anyway, if you're feeding a large amount of animals in one space.
Concentrated animal feeding operation, okay. CAFO.
There we go. If you reach a certain level of animal units, you have to have a manure management plan, and that site has to be approved by the DNR. It can't be in floodplains and things of that nature, because obviously we don't want to send manure. And if you have livestock, you have dead stock.
Yeah.
We don't want to send that kind of stuff down the streams if it floods or whatever. So that's the benefit of buying an existing site, is you don't have to go through all of that stuff.
That's true. No, that's a good point. So outside of that, Do you have any idea, Travis, what it would cost to build a site new these days?
Actually, I do, just because of current events that I had happened. I had one house that got burnt on the inside. So we just actually went through all the process of figuring all that out. I think it was $490,000 to build a new house right now.
Wow.
And that houses how many birds?
That houses right at 33,000 chickens.
So this is this, we should ask this, I guess. There's different types of poultry, right? So are you doing meat?
Broiler.
Broiler? Okay.
Right, meat chickens. We grow a smaller chicken than a lot. A lot of what I've seen on TikTok, everybody only grows the 5 to 7 pound birds or whatever they grow. I don't have any experience with that. We grow a 3 3/4 pound bird, all the way from 3 3/4 to 4.5.
So you're probably growing those little tiny ones you see in the grocery stores?
The ones at Costco rotisserie chickens?
Oh, they're so good.
Rotisserie. I know they say a lot of ours goes to Popeye and KFC as well.
Oh, yeah. No, that's pretty cool. That's a good point, because when we think of a pig...
Killed us last year whenever COVID hit and nobody was going out to eat.
Ah, yeah, I could see that.
What is yard bird?
Yard bird. but that's a good point when you talk about an animal unit or a pig space, because that's something that's going to come up in your manure management plan. So would you say then, Travis, that it'll vary on the condition of the site that you're buying, whether it compares in cost or is cost savings over building a new one when things get put together?
I haven't ever seen where a new farm would pay very well. Okay. Building new.
And that's, I think, Corey, you'd echo on the same thing. I've looked at a couple of customers that have inquired about the cost to build a new hog confinement, and it just seems like prices have gone up so high to where the early return is very minimal.
Yeah, I mean, so I can speak to my experience. When we bought our site, we were doing our research on what it would cost to build a new one. And at that time, it costed about $300 per pig space. And so when we talk about pig spaces, we're wean to finish. So we get, you could also do feeder to finish. So wean is 12 pounds to 300. Feeder is 50 pounds to 300.
Uh-huh.
So you got a little bit different units cost-wise there. But we ended up buying our site for like $125 per unit per pig space. But then we also had to upgrade it to about $165. That's how much money we had to put in. So that's how we thought of things. Now, I've heard, Tanner, I don't know, maybe you can correct me on the banking side because I haven't priced one lately, but it's like upwards of $350.
Correct. That's what we've been hearing is that $350. And it all depends upon what land you're going to put on it. Or going to put it on.
Yeah.
So if you have to do additional well costs, or you have to come up and get power, you know, the appropriate power to the site, all that can affect.
And on the backside of that, it's what are they paying, right?
True.
It hasn't changed that much. The new sites have gone up a little bit, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
But
we'll get
I've heard it's gone from like 9 or 10 years to pay off a new site to 15 years now.
Yeah. And I find this the interesting thing now when we roll into a little bit about fat cattle is the facilities for poultry are pretty much technology regulated. So if you're going to feed for somebody, they've got a certain amount of technology that you want in this barn. Same thing with the hog barn. Everybody wants their gate packages set up the right way. The feeder's a certain feeder and put everything in a very standard way. You get into fat cattle or growing calves and you find everything from open lots to hoop barns, to monoslopes that are deep bedded, to monoslopes that have a liquid pit beneath them. What, you know anything about that, Travis? Why hasn't the beef industry kind of come down to a unified decision on what type of facility to use to finish fat cattle out?
Man, I don't know. It's a lot different game. Down here, nobody has any of those. Nobody carries, nobody finishes cattle in barns here. I mean, almost everybody's out on, everybody's, you know, just in pens. I've seen feedlots here built on a hillside, just the way it works. But there's nothing here raised in barns.
So maybe it's resources then and a little bit weather.
I would argue maybe, and I have no experience in the feeding out cattle industry besides doing some FFA cattle, but I think cattle's kind of the last frontier of being vertically integrated. You know, that yes, there is custom finishing cattle, but not like if you're in poultry, you're pretty much, I'm pretty sure, in contract finishing.
Yep.
If you're in hogs, you're pretty much in contract finishing. Because if you don't, you have no leverage when you go to market.
Right? Right.
You're just a small, tiny little minnow in a huge ocean.
Yeah, we've got a location here in north central Iowa on the poultry side that is a co-op. So it's a cooperative setup, and everybody owns their own birds. But ultimately, it's all marketed together through that co-op, and they focus on the breast meat. So it is very rare. That's not a like you were saying, a very popular option.
What are your in-laws' facilities like for finishing cattle?
Yep. So they've got, that's kind of where my basis of information come from, is there's some outside lots, and then they've got four hoop buildings and one deep pitted monoslope where it's slatted to manure. So not deep bedded, a deep pit. So they've got three different setups, and the rate of gain is significantly different as you go from A, B to C. So the outside lot, open outside lot, is the lowest, slowest. Hoops are a little bit better, but then the efficiency, basically every calf finishes in that monoslope because the efficiency at the late age of that calf is light years better.
And I think each has its place, right? You just have different severities of what's your cost of entry.
Correct.
And your cost of labor to finish those. I'm sure the outside lot's probably pretty minimal.
Yep. So Travis, the way you finish cattle in Missouri down in your operation, are you do you have like concrete apron? Do you have bunks? What's your site look like?
So like my feedlot site is bunks. I like the smallest feedlot. You guys wouldn't even consider it a feedlot probably. you know, down here, we don't finish hardly anything. I take anything. I might only go to 800 pounds.
Okay.
And then I'll let somebody else do. Well, because we're just not close enough to corn. It's got to go somewhere or enough commodities.
Right.
It's got to go up north. I feel like, to me, it makes more sense to send it up there where they don't have all the freight and all the expense in getting the feed there. So yeah, I've got my feedlot with bunks. We can hold about 100 and I've had as many as 230 calves in there, I think, 235 weight calves. And then background is my favorite thing to do, probably. Just turn them out on some pasture and bringing them in to feed every day.
So, yeah, you're talking a whole different cost of setup, of being able to run them out on pasture and have the open lots versus having a 10-foot deep, fully concreted, slatted steel building over a pit. So, yeah, you're right. You'd have to really do a good cost analysis based on the return.
So I'm completely naive here. I've heard people talk about backgrounding cattle a bunch. My thought is you're bringing a bunch of different cattle from different places together, and then you kind of make them one group. How does that work? Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's correct. So sometimes I buy some of my own calves. I don't have a lot of time, as much as I'd like to go sit in barns and buy calves. But I've got guys that'll buy calves sometimes for me. I'm not trying to talk like I'm some big operator on this kind of deal. I'm really not. I can only run about 500, probably is about as many calves as I can run outside of my commercial cow-calf operation at a time. And then whenever I have that many in that I'm in charge of, things get pretty hectic. But, we bring different calves together. Just depending on what the market is, we'll buy them at 3 and 5 weights. And I'm not a cattle trader, but if I can make $100 on them calves, I've always said, if I can make $100 on them and I've had them at least 60 days, then I'm going to sell them.
Right.
And that's just kind of how it is. We do some contracts out with people, you know, with a feedlot or whatever, but I don't have a whole lot of experience in that, more just the open market. And then I'll have people just contact me and want to buy them right out of the field. And that we do that as well.
And that sounds like exactly the precursor to the operation that my in-laws have. So then when you get up to that 6, 7, 8 weights is when they start showing up at our feedlot. And then we pour the coals to them with earlage, rylage, throw some cracked corn.
Just like you said, you got the ethanol plant down the road. You can get DDGs, and you got corn right out your back door. So
right.
But I think Travis hit on something that we should talk about next. So not only do you have to provide facilities when you get into contract finishing, but you're also going to have to provide the labor in most cases. Like you said, when you get that many calves on hand, it gets pretty hectic. But that's another one. Whether you yourself are going to do the work, or you're going to bring a hired hand on, or you're going to, some combination of the both, right, Corey?
Yeah, you have to be a good herdsman still. I mean, treat them as your own, because if you're not, you will lose that contract. Let me tell you, there is certain things written in that contract. It's always written for the people that own the livestock, because they're the ones that write it, that if you're not doing your job, they walk in there and the pigs or the cattle or the chickens don't have water, I mean, you're out.
Right. That's a good point. And Travis, so what are the hours like for you when you're dealing with that contract livestock? Is it a regular 8 to 5, or you got different structure than that?
It is kind of like an 8 to 5 for me. A lot of days I've got two little boys at home and a family that mean a more to me than anything in agriculture. So I do make a point to try to be home by 5 or 6 o'clock. Now, some, I'm not going to tell you, there's nights I work all night and it, you know, something goes wrong or whatever has to happen. I've got about 3 guys that work for me pretty full time. And I've got 3 or 4 of my buddies that come in, you know, and they'll help me run 200-300 calves through the corral if I need them to. They're happy to do that for, a lot of times for a case of beer.
Uh-huh.
And they're just happy to be there and happy to help a friend out and have a good time doing it. But like I said, yeah, I've got about 2 to 3 guys that work for me. 2 of them are really closer to full time than the other one's just kind of part time. And I'm not afraid to pick the phone up and call. As far as the chicken houses go, I'm not afraid to pick the phone up and call. We've got 3 local poultry supply companies, and they'll come in and do things whenever we need them to. I've got 1 contract crew, I've kind of got 2 contract crews that come in whenever I have anything major to do. If we're going to upgrade something or update something, they do a lot of that for me. Anytime I go into buying something, I want to make sure that it's going to pay enough that I can pay somebody else to do a lot of the work.
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense. So that with that, when you have birds coming in and birds going out, is that also your responsibility, or does someone else take care of the loading in and loading out?
So they take care of the unloading the chicks, but it's my responsibility there. I mean, it's my responsibility to have me there. I personally want to be there when birds go in and go out, not somebody that works for me, because those are the 2 most important times of the whole flock. But they come in and pick them up. They have a catch crew that comes in and picks the chickens up, as well as drops them off. But I need to be there to make sure water lines are set the right height. You know, chick size varies when they're first born. So you want, and you really want to be exact on that. And just lots of little details. Whenever they're going out, you want to be there so that if the catch crew runs through the wall with a forklift, that you can tell the integrator, hey, this happened. I need compensated for this. Because that catch crew certainly won't tell anybody about it.
What is it? So you say a catch crew. Is that like a loading crew? Are they the ones loading them?
They're contracted through the integrator.
Okay.
And there's about, I don't know, 10 guys that, they have a rough life. It's it's not a fun job. It is hot. It is nasty. It is catching little chickens that can scratch the crap out of you.
So are they catching them by hand?
Yep, all by hand.
Holy smokes. There's got it.
They used to have machines, but I guess the mortality, I'm not sure. I wasn't around for that. From what I heard, the mortality got a little bit too high, and it just wasn't feasible anymore.
That's interesting, because we have no experience with that. I was envisioning like this conveyor belt, like shooting chickens onto a truck.
I kind of envisioned like a big pool noodle that just started
chicken
at one
cannon?
End. Oh, that'd be nice. Like a big pool noodle just started at one end of the barn, and you just kind of pulled it all the way down. And
I need a pig catch crew.
You need a pig catch. Okay, so what is the process on the hog side, Corey? When you're talking about labor, how long does it take to take care of a barn, and how often do you have to be there?
Yeah, if I was just taking care of hogs and that's it, it would not be too bad of a day-to-day job. As long as pigs are healthy, and it varies, because when the pigs are young, it takes a lot of extra time. That's when they're most vulnerable to disease and got to pay a lot of attention. And then when you're marketing, it takes a lot of time. But I'm talking between then a couple hours a day, maybe.
Okay.
Older site like mine, it's nothing to walk in and all of a sudden, oh, this is broken. It wasn't broke yesterday. And all of a sudden you're going on a parts run, and you know, it takes nothing to be there for 8 hours.
Right.
But for the most part, a couple hours a day. When you're marketing, might be in the middle of the night, you're loading pigs, might be in the morning, but I try to be home at 5 or 6 as well, as long as we're not in the field or anything like that on the crop side of things. So it can be a good life if you just want to be in the on the livestock. But unfortunately, or fortunately, maybe the livestock gives us a chance to do other things too, like farm or do podcasts or bank or whatever.
Right. So then, obviously, Travis, we got to clean these barns between groups. So is that one of your responsibilities, or someone come clean your barn for you?
We actually just clean as needed. So the biggest thing is our litter maintenance, and I hire all of it out.
Okay. So what is litter maintenance?
Just basically we'll just go through it from beginning to end there. Well, whenever the flock goes out, so I have flocks for 35 days. And then we'll have usually between 15 and last year as much as 38 days of out time between flocks. And it's we windrow all the litter and the bedding and everything. You know, the bedding's kind of all the litter's kind of on top. The bedding's, you know, now underneath because the birds have been in there for a while. And it's all windrowed into a windrow where it can heat up and kind of kill all the bacteria and stuff in it. I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I don't know the science behind it, but that's what they tell us we need to do. So that's what I do. And then we have a machine that comes in and takes all the cake out, takes the litter off of the top of the bedding, basically, and tries to leave with just the, you know, the bedding is what's left behind. And then we leave it there for 14 days in a windrow, and then they spread it back out, just kind of get it as flat as they can throughout the whole house.
So you're recycling the litter.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the cake, or the what we call cake, I have no idea why it's called that, but it's because crap doesn't sound good, I guess.
Right.
But that's kind of what's on top of all your bedding. So it is removed between flocks, you know, the best we can there before we even windrow it. That they have a machine, the company I hire has a machine that comes in and takes that off the top.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's a little bit different, Corey, than the way you clean barns. So can you describe to our listeners what it takes to get a barn ready between turns?
Yeah, so we're, like I said, we're weaned to finish. We have two groups of pigs a year. If you're a feeder to finish, you'd have three. So we have to wash and clean the barns twice a year as weaned to finish. If you were feeder, obviously it'd be three times. We obviously empty the barns. I have to soak the barns down. I got these soakers that are ran on a timer because we have probably a cake that's on top of the slats that you'd have to take like a shovel to scrape it off. You could not just go in there with a power washer and wash that off without soaking it down. So I soak the barns for like 3 minutes every 40 minutes or something like that, and at that time, you can go in there and wash it off with a garden hose if you really wanted to. That's how it sloughs off. But then I hire a crew that has specialized equipment, specialized power washers, very high PSI, heat, all that. They come in, wash it, and then we actually, after it's washed, then we spray it with sanitizer to try to sanitize any diseases that are in there.
Right. So yeah, a little bit different process there. So then when we go to the feedlot side, so I'll just kind of describe what the in-laws operation has is, so they have a father-son set up and then two full-time employees. And the daily tasks for those employees are obviously feeding those cattle. But then whether it's grinding hay or hauling in corn or hauling in other feedstuffs and cleaning sheds. So in the outside lot, there's a lot less daily maintenance and manure maintenance because those get scraped up maybe once a year, maybe between groups, potentially, depending upon how busy it is. But the deep-bedded hoop barns, they get corn stalks added, corn stalks or bean straw or some type of a material that can help soak up the manure on a frequent basis. And then those are cleaned out between each group of cattle. So that's going to come out in the form of solid manure. And then obviously the monoslope, it is little to no daily maintenance on a manure and cleaning side. They've actually never washed this barn. It's never been power washed for the 7-8 years that they've had it. However, with that deep pit underneath of it, that has the capacity for about 8 months. So it gets pumped spring and fall. So as far as that goes, that's what we're looking at in those three types of lots. Now, your lots in Missouri, Travis, do you clean those out very often? How often do you try to get manure out of there?
Yeah, it just depends on, of course, how many calves we've got coming in and going out. I don't like to raise calves in the middle of winter in the feedlot, and I don't like them in the middle of the dead summer. We definitely, just as needed, it's shoveled, basically skid steers. Just use skid steers to shovel it all right off the top of gravel lots.
Yep.
And that works pretty good for us.
That's one thing I would say that when you get in a contract on the hog side of things, you don't get a choice of when you have pigs in the barns or, you know, it depends on kind of your rotation and you're kind of at the will of the weather. I think last spring when we got our first wean pig in the door for the year, it was -7 out and it has to be 83 degrees in the barns.
Yep.
So, and bye LP.
So as we get into one of the next phases here, that LP is one of your costs. Mm-hmm. That's your cost, not the integrator's cost, correct?
Yep.
So before we jump into that side of it, let's go with the other ancillary equipment. So for example, on a feedlot side, if you're going to custom finish fat cattle, you've got to have
something with a loader on it, whether it's a skid loader, a tractor, or a payloader. You got to have something with a loader on it. You got to have something with a feed wagon, whether that's a tractor attached to a feed wagon or a feed wagon mounted on a truck. At minimum, you have to have those two pieces of equipment and preferred someplace dry to store your feedstuffs. So that's the additional equipment at minimum.
You could have a Laylee.
Or you could be set up with a Laylee system like we that we learned from Iowa Dairy Farmer.
Yep.
Iowa Dairy Farmer Dan, that's true. But you got to have something to get the feed physically there because of the amount, the sheer volume. Of course, now on top of that, if you are going to handle the manure yourself, that's either a tank or a spreader yourself. If you are going to handle the bedding, well, that's some type of a material collector, whether that's a stacker, a baler, or something along those lines. So there's a lot of additional equipment that comes along on the cattle side. What about on the poultry side, Travis? If we wanted to run a custom poultry operation, that's all we were going to do, what type of equipment would we need outside of the physical barn?
Yeah, so basically, if you were to get into the broiler poultry, I can only speak for the broiler side. If you wanted to get into that, you've got to have the barn and the company who you plan to contract through. I mean, before you even had given a loan, as a banker, you probably already know, we have to have an intent to contract. And in order to get that, they're going to, make sure that you're going to agree to do all of these things and have so many feeders per every so many inches and a water nipple on so many drinkers per every square foot. And they're going to make you meet a lot of things. So you're going to have, I don't even know. The new houses are so much bigger than mine that they're building. They're building 60 by 600s or 60 by 700s now in our area, I think.
That's big.
Yeah, so you got to have feed lines, feeders, I'd say half your cost. That's just a guess, is tied up in your equipment inside the barn.
So then for outside of the barn, do you have to have a tractor on site? Is that necessary to have any equipment outside?
Not necessary, but probably, good idea. Like I say, I hire all my litter work done and stuff, so I normally have those guys handle that while they're there. Both my poultry farms are pretty close to the beef farm, so I do run into problems with having tractors that will fit in areas. Unless it's a skid steer, it's hard for me to get any of my tractors in and out of any of that because they're too big.
Oh, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So what about on your site, Corey? Anything outside the barns that you need?
A very much want would probably be a skid loader. I mean, just to handle any dead stock. We have it to help move the chute around, but probably wouldn't be a necessity. You could get by with an older tractor, but just be aware that you're going to be out when it's -7.
Yep.
Doing that stuff. Something with a cab would be nice.
I hadn't put a lot of consideration to this because both my family and my in-laws also have a row crop operation. So we've got tractors, loaders, equipment that are around. But to think back to the basics of that, really, you need something to handle the dead stock, as you phrased it when we first started this. So whether your integrator is going to provide you with a dumpster or a method or a compost pile or whatever you're looking at, getting it transported from A to B is probably the most necessary piece of equipment. And then the other one I didn't even think about until really drilling down for today is you're probably going to have to mow and maintain these sites. So a lawnmower bat wing or something that can maintain the square footage of yard or whatever is directly around that building is probably necessary.
Yeah, and that's pretty key because tall grass harbors rodents and things you don't want that can harbor disease. So it's good to keep a clean yard around the site to keep that to a minimum.
Okay, so now our listeners have been waiting for the part that I think they're probably going to care about the most is how do we get paid when we are doing contract growing. So we'll start again with you, Travis. So on the contract side for your poultry operation, how are your we're not asking for what you get paid, but how your contract is structured. Is it on a bird by bird basis? Is it on a calendar? How does that work?
Right. So we get paid by the pound of birds that we sell. Well, I say sell, but we're not really selling. We never owned them, but
right.
So we get paid by the pound. Yeah, we get paid. So we are actually on a competitive pay scale. You're competing against everybody who got birds the same week you did.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that a lot of times. It's I understand the reasoning for it. They need you to have a reason to do good. Besides just having the basic animal husbandry in your blood and wanting to take good care of animals. They want you to do great, not just do do good.
Yep.
So we get paid on a feed, we compete on a feed conversion basis. It's actually a pretty big algorithm what they do that we compete on. But it's, you know, our game per day and our feed conversion and our livability and our condemned pounds, the age of our birds. They combine all that information and they kind of figure out who did the best. And so you're going to get paid a little bit more per pound than the whoever is obviously in last place is going to get paid the least amount.
Oh, gotcha. So is there any type of a guarantee in your contract? Like, you know, you're going to at least make this much per group?
There is zero guarantee.
Interesting.
So you're only guaranteed a price per pound and then maybe some other factors of feed conversion and that kind of stuff.
Right.
What's a good rate of gain for a chicken, for a broiler?
I'm looking at my last flock. I do have my paperwork here with me. I'm in my, actually I'm upstairs in my dining room, but I brought it out of my office. It's a 0.1137 pounds per day.
0.1137. So about a tenth of a pound.
It's worth noting, this is a little lower than some flocks that I've had, but I did this flock, we placed first place.
Nice. Interesting.
Of course, so, I didn't grab the last place flock to talk about.
So that's a lot different than the contract structure that you've got, right, Corey?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I would say we're not compensated on pounds at all. It is basically they're renting the space from us. They figure how many pigs they can put in our square footage of the barns, and then that's what we get paid on. So, which to me has always been nice because you're not in control of the pigs they're bringing in. I've gotten some groups before that are absolute crap. I mean, they're crap coming in the door. So that would really make me mad if we're not sending as many pigs to market and I had no control of where they came from.
Right. Right. If you were only based, like Travis, on how many pounds. What happens?
Do you guys have that issue? Would you guys have where you're sourcing chickens from, or is it a lot more stable?
Absolutely. So all of our chickens come from the integrator. I talked to my integrator. They said I'm allowed to talk about them. I grow for George's, which is the ninth largest poultry producer in the United States. They have their own hatchery. They have their own laying farms that bring the birds from there or the eggs from those farms to their hatchery. They're hatched there. I mean, there are a little bit of variations in genetics as compared to what went into the different laying farms. But for the most part, you got to keep that out of your head. Or you'll just start, if you let that start getting in your head, you're going to just find reasons to be mad about something or another.
Right.
I always tell myself that a well-maintained good farm can make bad birds grow good and good birds grow great.
Well, nice. I like that. And that's a very positive spin. I mean, that goes to be said a lot is, there's going to be bad days in every type of farm, whether it's livestock or not, contract or owning. And you got to stay positive. That's a good little insert in the middle of this. But interesting to know that yours is based on rate of gain. Corey's is pretty much a flat rate on a rent per space. And then, you know, correct me if it's different where you're at, Travis, but cattle's kind of a combination of the both. At least the way that it's set up on our feedlot is you get a yardage fee and you get, based upon what feedstuffs you're providing versus the owner of the livestock is providing, plus the space that they're in. So it's a different fee for that outside lot versus the hoop barn versus the monoslope at the in-laws feedlot. But then there's also a bonus based on daily rate of gain and feed conversion for them at the end of their contract. So it's it's kind of a mixture of the two when I'm hearing this, that not only do they get paid for their space, but there's also an incentive to, you know, take really good care of the animals.
Nice. I'll just want to throw in there that I topped our rate of gain the last time, too.
Well, I should have asked the in-laws. I feel like I'm left out.
1.88 per day, I think.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool. Like I said, I knew I was going to be enamored by the poultry statistics and the fact that it is less than a tenth a pound a day. But then you realize how small those chicks are when they came, when they originally showed up.
So you said they're hatched, not at your place, but then do they bring them like, what, a day or two later?
Just a few hours after they hatch.
Wow.
In like ideally. In the mail, in one of them little boxes like everyone gets?
So my big farm gets a full trailer load at a time, which is about 100,000 birds.
Holy cow.
And so, yeah, they bring them in by the pallets.
Okay.
and unload them one little tray at a time.
Nice. Okay, so now we're talking on the Farm for Profit podcast. So do you think this sounds like our three options are profitable? And I think that's a tough question to ask, because we already hit a little bit on what was your cost of ownership? What's your cost, your barrier to entry? I think if you're able to keep that cost low, maybe you're buying a site, refinishing it, refurbishing it, upgrading. I doubt you're able to start exactly brand new today without maybe some additional incentives based upon the contracts that are out there and available. But that's where it's tough to answer the profitable question, because I think it's going to be different for every one of our listeners.
We could throw some generalities out there, some ranges. I mean, I could talk ranges on the hog side of things, what you would expect per space.
That's fine. Go right ahead.
Just because we're negotiating our contract 2 weeks ago to extend it with our integrator. And when I was talking to an expert beforehand on the wean to finish side, sounded like existing sites were $40 to $42 per space. So that's for a whole year. So basically on a wean to finish, divide that by two, that's per pig.
Yep.
Roughly. Existing or a new site would be 42 to 44.
Okay. So there's incentive to have a brand new facility.
And that, I mean, and my argument to that with an older facility is I'm kicking the butt out of some of the newer ones, but it costs more, right? So the, you got to keep guys building.
Yep.
And then I know when we, a couple years ago when we were looking feeder to finish. So when you get them at 50 to 50 pounds, little less work involved. They're not as vulnerable there. It was anywhere, depending on what company went with, $34 to $38, $39 per space in there. So
I think I've heard just statistically thrown out around a hog barn that you try to look at a facility that will generate a return on itself on a 12 to 15 year calendar schedule. And that all depends upon how much you want to pull out for a living wage or how much you need to. If you don't have to live off this barn, if you have another source of income, you could crunch it down to 10, get it paid for in full, mm-hmm. and that generates a lot faster. On your side for the poultry, Travis, would you say the life of a barn, is it about that same 10 to 15 years for a payback on investment, or is it a different time frame?
Yeah, so the only way that they'll structure loans on these old the used poultry barns, I don't know about new because I've never tried to borrow that. For used poultry barns, is you're going to get a 7 year loan for approximately, I think 30% of the loan, and it covers that they just figure that's the mechanical, the feed line, stuff like that, and then you're going to get a 10 year loan. So that's just two separate notes that you're making a payment to both of them with every flock check. And the 10 years is going to be over your 70% of the loan, which is the land and the houses and stuff.
Okay. I think that makes a lot of sense. And then I did pick my in-laws' brain, and they tried to take that new monoslope and put it on a 7 year payback, not taking any of the income out of it. So that was fully investing the entire returns from that barn. And the way they phrased it was tried to. So I don't know necessarily if we're looking at 7 or 10 on that side of things, but it sounds like it's a lot pretty close to a similar return on that initial investment. And then of course you get to years 10, 12, 15, 16. That's when the real profitability probably kicks in, because you don't have a payment anymore.
That's when you have to go in and redo everything.
That's true.
And get another note to remodel.
Update the technology.
No. So when we bought ours, it was a 15-year-old site, and we did it on a 10-year note with expectations of paying it off in 7 years. Well, that was 2013 when we bought it. Times were pretty good at the time. Just came out of 2012, which was a drought, but we actually had decent crops with good prices. But then things came back, and so we actually are taking the full 10 years to pay it off. Mm-hmm. So 2023 will be paid off there. But yeah, staring us right down is a gate package that we need to do, probably update some other things. I mean, several hundred thousand dollars of work that'll extend it out a little bit. But yes, you can get some decent cash flow there once it's paid off.
Perfect. And I could go further into all that on the poultry side. about the updates. That's kind of like the getting paid and being mad about, you know, you didn't get the good birds this flock or whatever. Kind of the same way, you know, people feel like that the poultry industry wants to keep them in debt the entire time that they own the farm with requiring updates and what have you. I've found that it's very usable to use grants through the USDA to the government is happy to help you out and help you update things. They want you to see you become more energy efficient, of course. And so in doing that, a lot of times you're staying updated to where they want you to be, where your integrator wants you to be.
That's a good point.
I've taken big advantage of that on both of my farms. And we just finished about $160,000 worth of work at one of my farms. And it didn't cost me a dime.
Wow. What was the main thing there that you guys updated?
Do what now?
What was the main thing that you guys updated?
We did probably the biggest expense was the spray foam. Spray foam insulating the entire houses. We're premium tunnel ventilation houses, so we don't have any curtain sides or anything like that. So this particular farm that we just upgraded was built in 89. So it was conventional when it was built. And then it was years before I bought it, it was all boarded up, but with just foam board insulation on the outside of the plywood where the old curtains used to be. And so we just came in and had a company come in and spray foam the entire insides of the houses. And that was all covered by that grant.
Huh. That's handy.
So what's the temperature? What, I mean, obviously that's keeping heat in. That's what you're wanting to do, like when the birds are small, right? What temperature do you guys run when you bring the birds in?
90 degrees.
90.
Wow. Yeah, you were complaining about your 80. So
he's Southern Missouri. I mean, we're up here in the Arctic. It seems like.
That's pretty funny.
So, well, same as what you talked about earlier. LP is one of our very biggest expenses. It's hard to make money in the winter.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about that on the input side. We've looked into doing solar before. I know a lot of newer sites will do solar, and there's grants as well there. Our particular energy company that we use does not net meter. So they do not give you a bank on the months that you're, say, summer months, you're not using or you're producing a lot of energy from the sun.
Right.
But maybe you produce more than you use. They won't give you that benefit back on the other side. So it really
hamstrings.
It's hard to get it paid off. It was like an 8 or 10 year payback, and we're like, well, I mean, these barns are old enough now. I mean, are we even going to own them in that amount of time, or still have hogs in them? I don't know.
No, that is an interesting consideration. So I've been trying to keep notes, and I had jotted some things down ahead of time. Let's kind of run through some advantages and disadvantages of the contract growing setup before we get ready to wrap this up, talking a little bit about why or what our listeners should look out for. So some of the advantages you guys cue in on, if any of these stick out one way or the other. So the advantage to custom finishing is you have some reduced management responsibilities. And I don't want to discredit what both Travis and Corey have said. There's still a lot of management that goes into day-to-day of the animal husbandry and being a good herdsman, but you aren't booking the feed, booking the cost of all of the ingredients for the feed stuff, hedging, you know, looking at the cost to get the bird, make the bird, make the pig.
Genetics.
Do the genetic choices, or on the sales side of contract, you're not having to do any of those management items, right, Travis?
That's correct.
So there's less risk and less risk of loss of income to the grower, the contract grower themselves. However, that does limit your upside potential. At least on Travis's contracts, if the birds do well, he gets paid well. But there's very little upside potential for you, right, Corey?
I mean, I've been in some contracts that have bonuses, I guess you would say, if you market well or all that. But for the most part, it's negligible. When we're talking just the contract by itself.
Yep. So it's relatively fixed income. There's less operating capital that's necessary, because if you think about that, you would probably have to carry an operating note or have cash on hand to own all of these birds, to own all of the hogs, to own all of the cattle. So you don't have to come up with that side. You do have the opportunity to work in livestock. If you have a love of land animals, that's a way to get into this without having to own them.
On the operating capital side, when we filled our barns, that's when PEDV was going around.
So what is PEDV for our listeners?
Porcine...
It's a virus.
Epidemic virus.
Yep.
Basically, severe diarrhea and dehydration when it's at the sow and farrowing stage, basically 100% death loss. Mm-hmm. Once you get them a couple weeks old, it's not as bad. But anyway, that was going around really affecting the pig market. I think wean pigs were over $100 per wean pig.
Couldn't find them.
And we were double stocking at the time. So we had $1 million worth of pigs at our site.
That you didn't have to pay for.
That we didn't have to pay for. I mean, and also have the risk in. I mean, can you imagine something getting PEDV and half of them going to, from $1 million to 500,000? How would you like that as a banker?
Don't even want to think about it. So another one is this is the opportunity to get additional income from your farm. So maybe you do have an acreage that is underutilized and you could build a barn in that area. Could also, like Corey said, he picked up a little bit of crop ground when he bought his site. So it could be a way to get additional income from your farm. The borrowing Travis hit on. So that's key for me as a banker. When you come to me with a contract, I'm going to be more likely to grant you a loan than I will to consideration if you're going to fill these with your own animals. It's just a more risky process if you're going to also own the animals. So it does help on the borrowing capacity, wouldn't you say, Travis?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's no way it cost a fortune that own the animals.
So then the last one that I have, and I'll be curious if you guys think I missed anything, is the manure side. And I listed that as a positive. Now, there's a lot of work that goes into managing, maintaining, distributing, spreading, and potentially monetizing manure. However, we're going into a crop year to where fertilizer prices are going extremely high. So it can be, and we also know that there are natural benefits to livestock manure itself. So I put that down as a benefit. Travis, do you look at the manure as a positive, or is that a negative in your eyes?
Sure, it's a positive. Like I said, that's kind of the reason we first got into the chickens, is just the fertilizer quality in the manure. Also, you can sell it. It'll bring $10, $12 a ton in this area. Some areas you can get a lot more than that.
Oh, truck some of that up here.
There you go. After the call, Corey and Travis are going to talk, get some poultry litter.
The problem is the freight.
Yeah.
So did I miss anything, do you think, on a positive side, an advantage side?
I think spinoff of one of these, of the opportunities, it's just, for me, it was my way back to the farm,
mm-hmm.
right? Like the livestock pays my salary. That's where the check comes from. Everything else that, because Dad hired me back to the farm, everything else that he gets from me, me coming to the podcast, me going and farming my own ground, that's doesn't have to be covered by anything else. So as long as I take care of the pigs, we're good to go.
Yeah, that would definitely be an advantage. Travis, you got anything?
I agree 100% with what he said. Definitely that was kind of my thing too. Whenever I first came back to the farm after being out working off the farm for about 6 years after I got out of college, that was a big deal, was how am I going to make enough income at this to make it? I'm the first full-time farmer in my family. So how am I going to make it pay enough to give me and my wife the life that we want? And that was a big part of it. Buying the poultry farms was a big part of sustaining that income.
That's a good point. All right, so now let's roll into some disadvantages that I jotted down, and I actually didn't have nearly as many. So maybe that's a sign, maybe I'm biased. But the first ones I came up to is that limited opportunity for growth. So limited upside potential. However, and then it comes down to, like you were kind of mentioning, the building packages that are dictated by the integrators. So maybe once you get the barns to a financially stable or paid for position, you have to throw more costs. So maybe it limits your growth opportunity a little bit. It's a high fixed investment. That's obviously why the integrators want us to do this, is they don't have to own every site, every barn. Someone else has to put forth the capital and invest in that site. Pressure to keep up with the technology changes, like I talked about. You might end up with higher production costs. Corey alluded to that with the high LP bills, if it's not built into your contract. So you could have a fixed income, in Corey's case, with input costs that are variable. And then the last one that I have is, you just might have less flexibility. If it comes time to load hogs out, you got to be there to load hogs out. If you would like to make a management decision in the barn that your integrator doesn't agree with, you don't own the animals, so you can't make that call. So that's what I came up with disadvantages. Corey, got anything else?
So take this with a grain of salt, knowing that I am a contract grower. But on a large economic and worldly view, I think it gives us less freedom. It doesn't give us as much free market, and it invites vertical integration and price fixing and stuff that you see like in the Packers and things of that nature.
Yeah.
It just invites that kind of thing. So that's my issues with it. But like I said, I see the benefit enough to do it myself.
Oh, I get that. Travis, you got anything to add on the disadvantages side?
I agree with both of you guys. I just read an article this morning, actually, in the news about there was some lawsuit against all the major poultry producers for, like Corey was talking about, that controlling the market. And apparently they're trying to settle out of court on it and pay some producers. I don't think our integrators involved in that. But some of them were having to pay some farmers something. I don't know. It was a quick read, but definitely that's a downfall or drawback to doing it on the contract is they can kind of control you on that quite a bit more. We don't get a lot of say. I can't say, hey, these should have brought, you know, these chickens need to bring more money or right. whatever as far as that goes. Right. Before we finish, I wanted to add in that because I get on social media all the time. I have people ask me, how do I get started? How do I do this? In any kind of farming, definitely on the chicken thing, the biggest thing is getting into it for the right money. If it doesn't work on paper, it's never going to work in real life. You've got to be selective. Whenever I went to buy a poultry farm, it took me 3 years to buy my first one. And I actually made an offer on my second farm before I bought my first farm, even though I didn't buy it till a year later. It just because I wouldn't go up on my offer. And they just continued to not be able to sell it. And finally, they called me back a year after my initial offer and offered me the farm for what I'd offered them.
Their little persistence went into that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One other negative that I thought about is the public perception of livestock is, and that could be a whole nother, episode, just, the way our world is going that way. And, our main farm is based in a county where you can't have a CAFO.
Can't build a new one.
Not very easily. I mean, you'd have to have lawyers involved in that kind of stuff to the point of why would you?
Right. That takes all the gravy out of it when you have to have attorneys representing you.
A lot of Karens.
Man. No, that's good. So then my banker hat came on, and I wanted to remind our listeners before we wrapped up some things to consider when they get into these contracts is the first rule of contracts is always whoever writes it is usually the one who gets the most benefit. So read the dang thing. Have somebody read it that you trust, or you could have an attorney review. Just be very careful when you get into a contract, and don't be afraid to step up for your rights. If you don't like the way something's written, ask for clarity. Maybe they'll reword it. Maybe they'll take it out. You got anything along those lines, Corey? Would you agree?
We've done a few things here and there. Yeah. Just make sure you're both on the same page. You write it in the contract, both initial by it and sign it and both have a copy of it.
Yep. And then the last thing I've got is once you get into the contract and get doing this, Travis, maybe you would agree is you got to keep good records. Cause if you've got a complicated formula like you described and you're at the word for the way they do their math, you don't have any way to prove that they did it wrong. Right?
Sure. Definitely counts, you know, keep your feed tickets, and that goes in all business, all aspects of business. Always keep track of everything.
Corey, do you think you can come up with a challenge in the next couple of minutes? I'll hit a high-level summary. But, Travis, we ask all of our guests, what do the most successful farmers that you know all have in common? So be thinking about that answer here while I try to really high-level hit what we talked about. So custom feeding livestock, we talked about the facilities necessary, the amount of labor that's required, any additional equipment that you might need, and then what the contracts look like, how you're going to get paid. We talked about potentially how long the payback is going to take based upon the facilities that you either invest in to build or buy. Talked about the advantages to the contract grower, the disadvantages to the contract grower, what the advantages are to the integrator, and then wanted to remind you about reviewing these contracts and making sure that you keep good records. So with that, Corey, you got a challenge for anybody?
I guess. I don't know. I don't feel confident about it. I got two challenges, I guess. My first one is if you have a son or daughter that's looking to come back to the farm and you don't know how that's going to work, look into this. Look into contract growing. It might be a very easy way. I mean, that you. It's, and a lot of times it's it's so less stressful when you know that something's going to be paying for their way and it's not just going to be coming out of the bottom line, which might not be much there anyway. So I would say look into that. My other one is for the podcast side. This is not the norm for the Farm for Profit podcast to be talking about livestock. I know we haven't done it a lot, so it doesn't come as natural as talking crops and agronomy and that kind of things. So if you do have other topics in the livestock sector that you want to hear, reach out to us, farmforprofitllc@gmail.com. That's the number 4. Or hit us up on the socials.
I like that challenge. Thank you for suggesting this topic. We have no problem grabbing experts like Travis, someone who has an actual experience in the world of livestock to talk about this, but we don't know what you want to hear unless you tell us. So Travis, back to that question, the most successful farmers that you know, what do they all have in common?
I don't know. There's a lot of cliche answers that I could give you, like surround yourself with good people, you know, make good decisions, have a good banker.
That's right.
Don't let your banker take away with all your money. You know, don't get too close to your banker. He's also your enemy.
I'm sitting in the same room with him.
I'd say that if my banker were here too. But at the end, like it's same the basic rules of all business, I think apply to farmers just like they do anything else. The best rule that I could come up with or that I could think of is don't make any decisions based out of emotion. Don't do anything just, you know, it's all those stories you hear about somebody, oh, it's so great, they did it when everybody told them they couldn't. That's usually not a good idea. If everybody's telling you something won't work, usually it won't work. But like I said, so back to your question is, I guess my best answer is don't make business decisions out of emotion ever.
I like that. Nope, that's pretty good. I think we've had that a couple of different ways, but I don't think anybody's ever worded it the way you did, is making emotionless business decisions.
I think
decisions.
It's one of the hardest industries to not do that.
Yeah, well, it sucks. You know, there are people that have to watch their family farms go away and things like that. But I mean, if it doesn't make money, this is a business. We all love animals, but at the end of the day, I'm here to make money, and do what I love doing, hopefully to make that money. And if it looks like it might not work, then why would I do it?
No, I agree. Mm-hmm. So Travis, we thank you so much for joining us. If our listeners want to follow you on social media, how can they do that and which platforms?
I'm on TikTok. That's about it. You know, I just kind of got into that kind of oddball, and at Circle U Farms at TikTok. I don't even know what my handle is. Just either my name is on there. I guess that's what it is. Circle U Farms.
And that's you. It's not YOU. It's just the letter U.
Just the letter U. Yeah, the word circle, the letter U, and then farms, plural, FARMS.
Awesome. Well, I'll put that in the show notes. We thank you again for joining us. We also thank our partners, BW Fusion and Brandt, for sticking alongside these messages to help your farm achieve higher levels of profitability. Hopefully we did a good one. If we missed anything and you want to hear more about it, let us know. Otherwise, we'll talk to you next time.
Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long.